Welcome back to what I hope is now an annual episode of the Batuta Talks. We've done it before with these boys and we're doing it again. We've got Willie Mason and Justin Horro in the house. Thank you for joining us, guys.
It took us a while to get it going, isn't it? Three or four weeks it's been brewing for a minute, but we're here.
You got to let it go like 4 weeks, I reckon.
Well, yeah, I'm just looking at the round
just
now.
Just have a look at how things are going if we're talking rugby league.
Titans of independent media, really, you know. Busy things, all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah. I know, and we wanted to get a good look at the NRL season before we started gossiping about it. You're joined here from the Batuta end by myself, Clancy, and we've got Wendell here, who's absolutely pulling himself to the renaissance of the West Tigers.
It's a very, very strange feeling that I have. And I know it's completely unfounded and it's optimistic, but
savor it.
I haven't had this sense of optimism for a long time. I made the mistake of telling people yesterday, I genuinely feel for the first time in a long time that we could maybe play a game.
I'm not
football.
Saying you can't. I'm 100% with you. We just talked about it then. I was like, they look fucking all right.
They do. They do.
But they're also you can make the finals?
But they're also the West Tigers.
But then you think about like that. When you really break down the eight, it's like, yeah, you can pick about six, right? That's probably genuinely going to make it. And then all the rest, it's like, good luck.
Yeah.
Just try and jag a couple of wins here and there. And like, you know, they're all going to be in the same book as the Bulldogs, the Titans, and all the sort of lower sort of teams. They'll be fine. They'll get better every single year. Tigers have got a decent side.
They do. And as you said, jagging wins there. We're recording on a Tuesday after the Monday game. We have Dragons and Dolphins, two very gettable games before.
Next two.
They're the ones that you go, are they consistent enough to be week in, week out, or do we just dish it up every four games, right? It's hard. And, you know, it's hard to get like a Galvin kid who's like on, for an 18-year-old kid to be on every game, the week in, week out. It's good for four rounds, six, ten, you get that. It's just like you get, and you got to go through the origin period. And it's like, it's a fucking marathon, not a sprint.
But he's going to miss those two games too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. But the game against Para was a good sign because normally that's a letdown spot. We had one good win, so we'll drop the next one because we're feeling ourselves.
And it looked like that.
And it's the first time since 2020 that the Tigers have more wins than losses on the table. Two and one.
And a nice little bye, too. Winning a bye, 6 points.
Bang. So
that doesn't really count because any stats from 2020 was like when the world was ending.
That was it. We didn't know it was going to happen next week.
So, yes, I'm feeling good.
That's when the Tigers get going, when the horsemen of the apocalypse are on the steps. Boys, what's going on? Congratulations on all your successes, by the way. You've become a judging by some of the dummy spits I've seen in the newspapers, you've actually become quite visible in the world of NRL punditry. I know a lot of people that are tuning in to get the oil and listen to you guys like oracles. Did you ever see that happening with levels? Did you ever see you becoming authorities?
Well, firstly, thank you to you guys for hosting us. For people that don't know, we film out of here at Diamond Tennis Studios, and you guys have been great for us from day one. And like you said, hopefully we make this annual because we're here every year doing this. But trying to sound a little bit humble without being too far into ourselves, I always knew that we had a product. Biggest thing for me with podcast is, do the two host or does a person have chemistry? And I think me and Mace mesh well together. Yep. We have two different perspectives and it works really well. Yeah, everyone knows who Mace is. Not many people would have known who I was as much as Mace, unless you were
not
a diehard.
Not many people would have known you guys did that year together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two years.
Yeah. Where was that?
Manly then Catalans.
Manly then Catalans.
My life.
Mace's last two and it almost was my middle period, but it sort of ended me as well.
No, it is about chemistry. It's about chemistry, right? I've known Hoss for like 15 years, right? And we've always had this ongoing, we could just talk about shit, right? And just same page sort of mentality. We might have different views, but it pretty much ends up on the same sort of page, right?
Or we can disagree.
Disagree is not a big deal. Yeah. You just have a different perspective. I have a different perspective, but we're not sitting there arguing like a Stephen A and fucking Max Kellerman. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's not an argumentative show. Yeah. We're pretty much around the same ballpark, you know what I mean?
And if you disagree, you break it down, which is what I love.
Yeah. It's why do you disagree? Yeah. It barely happens. It's like, this is what I think. Yeah. This is what you think. Okay, well, let's find common ground there. Mm. I think that's where punters love it, right? Because you're going to have you're going to sit around a pub and have two or three different perspectives, right? You're not going to have 10.
Yeah.
You're really going to, and you'll find your common ground. So I think that's what happens.
With Queenslanders, they say you get four round the table and eight opinions.
That's about right.
I want to talk about football now. It seems like early in this season, we're seeing a lot of injuries. I feel like when what I'm about to say next is something that you guys might have planted in my mind as a seed last season. Are the boys playing too many games?
No, I don't think so. I think it just happens with the game. Yep. You could go through every single year and go to round four and go, fuck, there's some injuries.
Yeah,
it's right. Just because whatever they've been putting in the Telegraph or whatever the narrative they're trying to go at, you just know. You know about it now. If they didn't report on it, you wouldn't know. You just think, oh, he's missed a couple here, missed a couple there. Yeah. But it's when it happens to the big players.
Yeah, that's the difference.
The ACLs. Yeah. When the stars go missing, it's like, oh, damn, because you want the stars in the game.
Yeah.
You know, the Reece Walshes, you want to see him every week. You want to see the big dogs every week. So when they're not on your TV, then you start talking about it. But there's injuries every single week. It just depends on who it happens to.
Mm. How many games would you lose big four in 1 week?
Yeah, 1 week. And then you go, oh, we're playing too many games? No, you're not.
But how many games would have you played? So once you'd kind of established, you'd won a premiership, you were now – like an established player. I'm not going to ask you, Justin, because you kind of came a bit you came when all the exhibitions had kind of kicked off, you know, the All-Stars and that kind of stuff. So, Willie, when you were playing, how many matches would you play a season? Like, what were you paid to play for?
24 games.
24 games?
Yeah, so plus your Origins, plus your Tests, everything like that. So that was mostly my peak. It was like
– And you're always playing finals, so that's another 3 games.
And so you – I think there was a couple of years there when me and the great Anthony Minicello in 2004, we played something like 40 games each. Like, I think he played 42 and I played 40 because I might have missed two during the year for suspension or something like that. Like it was, and he played 80 minutes of every game, right? And I'm sitting there, I'm playing perhaps 60 a game, you know what I mean? It's obviously different positions, but the amount of running he had on his back, and I had on his legs and back, and that's why he ended up with a back problem in 2006.
Yeah.
He played from 2000 to 2006. We both pretty much fell off nearly at the same time.
Yeah.
Like with injury, like a major injury, right? Yeah. You nearly need a major injury to reset everything, right? Mm. And that's why you put your hands together for guys like Cam Smith. You're like, not a major injury and play for 18, 19 years to play at the peak the whole time. It's like no one will ever do what he's done. Yeah. People sort of fall off, you know? Your peak is like about 6 or 7 years, and then you sort of plateau out, and then you just sort of play just normal stuff for the NRL, you know. But like, you need an injury every now and again. But to say there's too many injuries, no, there's not. You get injured, it's just been the wrong players have been injured, our superstars.
Mm. One thing people forget is Jonathan Thurston played all but 20 minutes of every minute of the eight in a row. It was 20 minutes he sat out for when they thought
he'd shattered his leg. Yeah. That's when he nearly broke his leg out of the socket and he just walked off. They had to pull him off.
Yeah.
Cam Smith would have played every minute, wouldn't he? Or did he miss any games there?
I think he missed a couple of games. I think he missed – that's why JT's held in such high rate, 36 games.
I think Cam started before slightly.
Cam started in 2003.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he was at the back.
And JT didn't start to 2006.
Yeah.
And then once they started winning, JT come in, I believe, right at the start when they started dominating, right?
06, when they come in. So Cam was like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, JT come in the 06 series when they beat us down in Melbourne and then didn't stop. Every minute. And you know, I want to explain to people how hard it is to even play Origin, right? But to be able to be fit for Origin, you've got to get through a 10, 11 games of NRL. And even back then, you had to get through an Anzac test, the preseason, everything to be fit for this 6 week little fucking break, not break, 6 week little thing that we have over like whatever. And you've got to be fit for that as well. And then dominate through the games, play for your state on Wednesday, back up on the Friday, and then go through that whole thing again. Rinse and repeat. For how many years did he do that? 10 to 12 years? Far out.
I think for Origin specifically.
For Origin, so 12, what? Oh, I don't know, 12, like 13 years.
I think it's like 13, 14 years.
And not miss a game. Yeah. Not miss a game. That's what I'm saying. He is so lucky, and he has had... I'm not saying he's never gotten injured. He's been injured in the right time.
Yeah.
He's done ops at the end of the year, so he's one of the toughest bastards that ever played the game. The amount of ankle and shoulder injuries that he just carries into games and just gets through. And then he'll go, I'll get the op at the end of the year, when he should be getting an op straight away.
I mean, I just haven't seen, since your guys' vintage, a stayer like that. Are you seeing one in front of you now with the kids?
No. I thought Munster was going to be like that, and he seemed to miss a couple of games here and there. It sort of catches up to you when you're in your back sort of 20s, like the 28, 29.
Yeah.
Cherry Evans is that good.
Cherry Evans is a stayer. Yeah.
He's the one that stands out. Yeah. He hasn't had. I can't remember the last time he's had a significant injury.
Yeah, nothing. And he's on about nothing crazy. He's like on 308 games. Recos.
I reckon he's got a couple more seasons. He'll get to 350.
Yeah,
and that's because he's been healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, especially someone like DC, there's so much neck that they could catch.
Hard to get through. It's hard to get through your 20s. Hard to get through your 20s without a major like ACL, a shoulder reco, or just something that'll set you right back.
Mm.
And like JT's had about three shoulder reconstructions, but they've all been in the same. So he's
I'm trying to think of the big boys. Isaiah Yeo, feel like he hasn't missed many games.
Yeah,
no, he hasn't.
Feel like he's
no he's probably the Iron Man of every game because he's 80 minutes too and he's in the middle. So you think in the last 5 or 6 years, right, whenever, just say they've been on their run 4 or 5 years now, I don't think he's missed that many minutes.
I can't remember him missing hardly any games,
maybe one or two games here and there.
And I suppose because he's a Dubbo boy and he's a bit more quiet.
Country tough.
Give a shit.
He's country tough, but he also you can forget that he's been out there every minute when they're doing the Mountie bop on the wing. You know what I mean? Like he's standing in the middle.
He's got three or four kids, doesn't he?
It's funny.
Look after them.
I had an interview with Talon May throughout the week,
and
apparently he's not allowed to touch the boombox. They refuse to let him touch the music because
he's playing too much hip hop.
He's heavy metal. That's his go-to. No, Talon. Talon was saying, Isaiah, he's not allowed to touch the boombox because he's heavy metal.
Megadeth.
Not really the same kind of vibe. The boys in Budgie's dancing around.
Talon said he didn't even know who the artists were, but he goes, nah. Like, he's not allowed to touch. Because I assume he's like maybe a Morgan Wallen country.
I thought country for sure, not heavy metal.
Heavy metal.
He's a townie, though. He's got the big DC skate shoes on and he's down playing heavy metal.
Yeah, I'd say he's probably the Iron Man.
Speaking of boom boxes, can I ask, Willie, at the Bulldogs there, it seems like every day I see a clip of Crichton or Adokar just having a great time with a boom box, flicking lights on and off, dancing around.
Yeah.
Is Critter like that?
He's like that
all the time.
He is. I just see his energy, what he gives to the boys. And like, I can just only imagine what he was like at Penrith.
Yeah.
With winning every year, every game. Most games you're probably dropping 3 or 4 a year. And like just the vibe that would be created out of Penrith, I'm just trying to think. Like he's created a vibe at Canterbury. And it's like we're not winning. We don't have that culture yet. We're trying to build towards that. But he just has a good time, man. He just loves life. He's 23 years old.
Yeah.
He's captain of the Bulldogs already. He's done a lot in the game. If we can really feed off what he's doing, add a few more pieces, and then we can sort of push for a little bit, you know. So – yeah, but he's always having a good time. So is Fox. Fox is about that. Yeah. They just, you know, when you've been around in good systems like Fox has been in Melbourne, they're never like that because of Craig Bellamy.
Yeah, yeah.
But Cleary just lets them be who they are.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah, it works. You look at Bizzer and Luai and Crichton, when Crichton was there, they were always having fun. They always
said
Critter
was the main leader in all that.
Yeah, okay. He's brought that across. He's feeling good.
Yeah, you just need to buy into it and everyone just have a good time. But it always helps when you're winning.
Yeah.
It always helps. But like to hold the boombox and have a good time when you're getting pumped by 50, it's not a good look.
We were out there. We went out to Belmore just to have a look. We did the Dynasty Chinese beforehand, the Yum Cha.
China's good.
Very good stuff. Great leagues club to pull up in as well after, particularly when the boys have just absolutely pumped the Titans. Might have been the best match to go to this year at home, right? Titans round two. What is the feeling out there? I mean, if that was my sample size to go up, my case study of this season, there's a vibe. I mean, it was the right vibe. It was multicultural round at Belmore and they won. But it feels like everyone's all in.
Yeah, it's a bit different. It takes a little bit to build.
Yeah.
And the cultures are set by the players and the coaching staff.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Mainly the players. You know, the Dogs of War and the entertainers and all that sort of stuff, that was like part of the Bulldogs' history, right? Yeah. That was like... You get anointed those things by ex-players.
Yeah.
You just got to create what you are. And then what we see every week, then you can create your own culture. And then people will say, that's those guys, right?
Create your own identity.
Yeah, create your own identity. And that's what the place, that's what people throw that word around culture a lot. Yeah. I'm like, no one's in charge of the culture.
Yeah.
No one, apart from the players and whatever the coaching staff has. Yeah. And I don't know what culture they're trying to drive. Because it's all like it's inner sanctum sort of stuff. I'm like, okay, we'll see it on the field.
Mm.
You know, I do the pathway stuff. I do the young kids, like from 17 to 21s. I've got a green light to just, I can rock up at first grade train. I can do whatever. I can sit there and watch, but I'm not like that.
Yeah.
Fucking think of 1,000 other things to do, right? And watch first grade train. They're good. They're athletes. Yep. Seen this before. See you later. Right. Mine is like 17 to 21. They're the next men up mentality where we need to get these kids like indoctrinated in what a bulldog is, what it looks like, yep. and what Cam wants to see. All the little boxes that you need to tick before you're ready to go up there. A lot won't go through.
I was speaking to some rather vibrant Lebanese gentlemen in the Canterbury Leagues Club, and one of them asked me, all of them were drinking schooners of hard solo, and one of them asked me, do you think they'll ever send the Bulldogs to Vegas? And I said, mate, if you are what's coming with them, I think there's some hesitations because the league club good. Was pumping. It'd be
20,000 Lebos on the plane. Crazy. I'd sell out.
Yeah, that's what they're looking for.
No. And they've all got a bit of cash too.
Yeah, you can see.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, like, not yet. Not yet. You know, we do have 5 years to get over there. And I think in that 5 years, you will be having a Bulldogs team over there. Sure. I think Penrith's the first one to get the nod. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. Probably they deserve fair. It. you've played out well. You've deserved it. You know, but all the other teams who aren't the, you know, the top of the list have to sort of wait to get up there.
We were talking about it while we were there.
Be fun, but.
Yeah. Well, we were thinking probably next year would be a Cowboys, a Warriors, Cronulla.
You definitely get the Warriors there. I think it's a team. And there's Penrith. And I think they won't go past Brisbane. You have to have Brisbane. And then the other one's probably up for grabs.
Yeah. Melbourne.
I think the Roosters. Yeah. I think that'll be your four.
Yeah. Now,
I think so. I don't know. Does that sound all right?
You didn't go, Scope. We want to talk to William about how that was, the inaugural NRL Vegas round. One of the very NRL ideas we've seen. Like, remember we were talking about 2020. Before Project Apollo, there was talk of an NRL island. This is the type of things that the NRL pull out of their ass, where they're like, yeah, we could all just move everyone to Moreton with their families.
That was actually an idea, wasn't it?
It was a serious contemplation. Yeah. And we were all for it.
Like, NRL island would have been the greatest thing.
Like, Valandis is a fucking maker. He just makes shit happen, Valandis.
And it was very close to happening. They're like, oh, we can build the ovals in a week or two. Like, we can have the... It didn't happen because basically Valandis bullied the government to allowing NRL to go ahead on the mainland. But, you know, an equally crazy idea is what we've since seen in NRL Vegas. It's the fact that there's 5 years. We all know how it's going to play out. Now, post-Super Bowl, you end up with a bit of a lull in the city of Sin. And Valandis has said to Nevada Tourism,
that's us,
how about I bring 40,000 cashed up NRL fans over there?
Yeah.
And you can charge them Australian prices and they won't know the difference. And it's exactly what happened. And everyone seems to think it was an actual – and it was a hit.
It was a hit.
It was hit. Well, tell me the vibe. You first land there. What is the first thing you do and what is the first thing you see?
Oh, God.
PG version.
Yeah. We land because –
I can show you the group chat.
We had to get a charter from – I think it was LA to Vegas with the Brisbane Broncos fans because the Tab sponsored the show. And they're big sponsors of Brisbane as well. So I was with a couple of like knockabout blokes, and they're just on the Broncos junket. Yeah. I'm like, we're staying at the same hotel, all this sort of shit. And I'm like, okay, this is all right. Met a couple of good blokes there, and so I was 5 nights there. So that must be Wednesday night, and then it was just nonstop. Fucking let's go every day and every night. I didn't even, oh, mate, there was no off button, and I love it because I don't have an off button either, so I'm built for Vegas. We had a couple of little things we had to do for the Tab. We did the podcast over there, so it was easy work. The energy of Vegas will just pick you up, right? If you're feeling sorry for yourself, you wake up and you're feeling a little bit dusty, shut the fuck up. Yeah. Get a drink in here.
So he's talking about our little producer, Lukey. Who unfortunately had to room with Mason. It wasn't afforded an off button.
The worst place you can be in Vegas is a fucking bedroom by yourself.
Yeah.
Like just with your own head noise. Yeah, it's just like, mate, get up, do yourself a favor, shower, let's get out. I was walking the streets with the Tab guys, a couple of Broncos fans that I've met. I don't care. Like I'm like that. I could just sit there, walk around, and just have a beer with anyone. The energy was just mad. Everyone was over there.
Were the Americans feeling it?
They were a little bit. Like when, you know, I think there was like 10,000 Americans that turned up. Yeah. All the rest were Aussies.
Yeah.
you know, by the time Thursday, Friday hit, because no one was going there just for fucking 2 days. They were five nighters or four nighters. Mm. And you just see blokes, I'd be walking out of the Cosmo like 10:30 in the morning. Hey, Willie, how you going, mate? Like, oh, damn it. Yeah, I'm good. But everyone's, it's not like you're doing that. You would never do that sort of shit in Sydney because it's just really frowned upon.
Yeah.
Mm. Over there, nothing's frowned upon.
Yeah.
And everyone's on the same vibe and same energy and no one cares.
Yeah.
It's Vegas and it's supposed to happen. You know what I mean? It's just like, I should have went harder. I'm like, I can't wait to get back there. I'll be like, no, I don't know my limits. I'm like, I could have went harder.
Yeah. I'm 2025, look
I feel
out.
Bad. I left some over there. I'm there's some energy over there.
If you didn't have commitments,
if I didn't have commitments, goodbye.
You, you're a good plane sleeper from all accounts.
No, I'm fucking awful. I don't sleep hardly ever.
Was there a moment when Vegas ended and you just went, okay. I'll see you in
yeah, LA, it was because I walked out of the hotel, the Cosmo, at 11:30 and I had to be at the airport at 1 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, well, it's over. I said, thank you, Vegas. I just sort of walked out. Just went, shrugged the shoulders a bit, got home, had a shower and went straight to the airport. Fucking done. See you next year. That was my attitude. It was, and everyone was like that at the airport. No one's like, no, you can't feel sorry for yourself over there. No one cares. But I'm saying, We're all coming. Everyone went so hard there, like all the ex players and that I've knocked into. I'm like, they're like, I can't wait to go back.
Yeah,
the game day experience, everything like that. It was just everything was top notch.
What's it like being inside the, you know, in a Super Bowl stadium?
It's like being in a massive nightclub.
Yeah, the Super Bowl stadium.
Yes, they close the doors. There's a DJ up the other end. Everyone's playing. All the smoke's playing. It's like being in a Vegas nightclub with 40,000 people in there. And I guarantee next year there'll be 60,000 there.
Yeah.
Because word of mouth like this, and you talk to a mate, go, how good was Vegas good? You're like, it's off its head. It's fucking great. There's no one's going to come back and go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with you. If you have a shit time in Vegas, go check yourself. Go straight to therapy. You've got something wrong with you.
Sounds like a bit of longer Bucks party
it
energy.
Is, mate.
Just
and
like
you just
gotta, 5 days.
You got to pace yourself. I'm not saying I went.
Bucks. Yeah, it would be.
It's the perfect Bucks. Oh, my God. Everything's perfect. But birthdays, Bucks, just wanting to go over there and support League, not give a shit about League. If you're an AFL fan, I'll be like, I'm going to Vegas because that looks mad.
Yeah.
It's an event. Mm. It is an event. You go in there and then they put two good games like that on. And which, if you didn't know the game, you look at it and go, holy shit, I love this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're looking at fucking Croker and the Manly boys just pump everyone, all of Kawatu. So if you're looking at it just a branding and you're like, wow, if I'm taking a sponsor, a potential sponsor, this is our product, you're like, I want in.
Yeah.
Why have you got 45,000 in America when you only played on the East Coast in Australia?
Yeah.
Melanie should be just sitting there like that, like the Don.
Yeah.
He's the king.
Do you think it kind of had the effect that we thought it would with it was like a start a gun to the season? Do you think from there we kind of rushed back to Australia to see what everyone else had in store for us?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was – I'm not sure. How do you reckon with that? Do you think it was just we were out of the block straight away and then we come back and we plateaued?
I think we've just gone like that.
Yeah. We started the year off mad. Everyone was sort of confused. Even I was confused. Is it round 0 or 1? Yeah. I'm not sure. Does this count for fucking 10? Hoss goes, it counts for 2. And I'm like, no, it don't. It's a trial game.
He thought South had the bye the next week, but it was round 0.
They all had the bye.
He goes, I think South will be better rested than the other teams because they got the bye next week. All four have the bye. Like, they're not playing round 1.
And you could tell too because most of the boys were out and I reckon the coaches would have been so happy with everything. There was no, like, regulations on anybody. There was no dramas because you didn't sit them in a room like kids.
Yeah.
You trusted them like adults.
Yeah.
They went out there. They behaved like fucking adults.
So they really did. There was potential for all that
to go
wrong.
Because I saw a heap of the boys out and I just kept walking. I was like, that's fucking, oh shit, the whole
surely
thing
there were some yonder pouches for the phones to go into after full time.
I think what happened, they looked after themselves. I think the amount of fuck ups that have been happening in the game, they would have got the talking to from everyone, all the big dogs.
Yeah.
You mess up, you're out.
Yeah.
Right? So when there's repercussions and consequences to your fucking little actions, then you get treated like that and you know the repercussions and you'll sit back because they're all adults and go, I don't have to do that shit. I'm not going to fucking get in a fight or do dumb shit. Like, you know, not that it happens all the time, but if someone's pressuring you at a joint.
NRL players have been locked up in Vegas.
We've been what? Hey, exactly. Shit can get sideways in Vegas. And, mate, there was a fucking ingredients right there to make shit go crazy.
From my understanding, all the teams let the boys go hard day one once they arrive. So they arrived about 10 or 11 days before. So they got it out of their system.
Right.
In LA.
Concentrated on footy and then always had the carrot.
Yeah.
We're going to let you go out after. So they were able to concentrate on that 10 to 11 day period, knowing
modern
that
modern day coaching.
They had a crack early, but a lot of them don't hardly any drink anymore, yeah, too. Right. So even though you get the green light, some, you know, obviously chose not to, some decided to party a little bit
that
after.
That's something I want to talk about a little bit with the, you know, a lot of blokes with faith, right? You had a bit of it in the Bulldogs. I'm sure you had a bit of it in Manly, Scope. But, you know, Hasm never had a beer. You have, you know, the Islander boys with their Christianity. Everyone wants to talk about this Penrith dynasty, and they always talk about, oh, it's a younger team, it's a different type of game. They've arrived perfectly in time for this new type of game. It's a running game. They're all younger and fitter than everyone. No one's mentioned that most of these boys don't drink.
Until you started on that, started thinking about it. That's an underrated part of their success.
Yeah, they're all good church boys, and they go home and play video games. They don't do what you like to do.
And the culture shift is great, right? I think it's great for the game. It's great for all these younger kids coming through. If the parents are going to go, okay, put your kid in rugby league. If you're coming through the 90s and shit in 2000s, you're like, these guys are a bunch of lunatics. Yeah. I get it, right? But we were just like products of our environment we chose, and that was the part that we had. Yeah. It was just a drinking culture.
I get it.
All the guys that you looked up to, the legends of the games in the 90s, next minute they're next door to me, right? And they're going, you're not leaving the lease up till you have a fucking beer. You're not leaving, like on a Tuesday night, you're not leaving the RSL till you have six schooners and shit. That's what I got indoctrinated into me.
But also you had like the 70-year-old blokes in the club there too.
Plus it's my choice. And if I want to have a good time, I'll have a good time as well. So I don't ever put it on the culture of the thing or anything. That's just me. Yeah. And if you don't want to drink, you don't drink. I don't give a shit what you do. The culture was like that, right? There was hardly a dude that didn't drink on, mate. Like, it was Hasm. We respected Hasm's faith.
Yeah.
He was the only one that didn't have a drink on Mad Monday, right? The only one. Even Pricey had his little Midorian lemonades, right? But he'd have a couple. That's about it. All the rest.
I didn't know Pricey was a teetotaler.
He never used to drink. But he'd have a little Midorian lemonade. Yeah. Celebrate the year, Pricey.
Delicious.
Warner used to love a Midori, didn't he?
So you're talking a whole other 30 players are doing the same thing, right?
Yeah.
When I come into the game only just turned professionally, not 96, 97. 98, the game come back together. So it's just like we were part of that whole thing.
You were a Hunter Mariners junior,
like,
weren't you?
Newcastle junior. But anyway, like from right now, like these young kids are coming into systems.
Yeah.
They're not drinking. Their senior players aren't drinking. It's not like that. It's great for a young kid. You know what I mean? It's good for even parents to put kids into rugby league or rugby union, because the whole culture of like professional sports, it's nearly frowned upon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm talking to young kids at the border. I say, what did you do on the weekend? No, nothing. Just hung with the family. I had one day off. I just recovered. I'm like,
boring.
Fuck. Next, I got to talk to a brick wall. You know what I mean? But that's just the way it is. And, I'm like, and I respect.
Mate's just trying to find out what the boys are up to.
And I asked them, I said, so these guys aren't even in the top 30. Yeah. These guys are just, but they're hustling to try and get in the top 30.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing? They're like, no. I said, is it like, do you boys hang out on the weekend? No, don't do that.
You guys
like,
get a Meriton hotel room, maybe?
And like, is this like, is there, and then I said, so
spend
I went,
30 hours in a Meriton?
Yeah, or? But I was just thinking, have you ever done that? So I was just thinking, so it took me a while to go, okay, well, this is not the culture anymore. Yeah. And just don't even fucking talk to them about anything. Just talk to them about life, right?
Talk about footy.
It's not about that. Fortnite. Just talk about footy and shit like, because they talk to me like I'm a fucking dinosaur. See, did this really happen? Dude, it's like 10 years ago. You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't play in the fucking 60s,
it was 10
mate.
Weeks ago in Vegas.
Yeah, mate.
I'm not even playing.
But like they just go, but that's the difference, right? With, you know, you talk to these guys, they're like, they're, with their families, they shit themselves.
Yeah.
Because of the pressure that's in training and everything, they're like, I don't want to be like hungover for the training session. Yeah. I'm like, it's a fucking training session. That's in my head. Like blokes used to, because it was the old school mentality.
Ring out the piss.
It was the old school sort of mentality. You drink hard, play hard, train hard. Everything was at 100%.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Wasn't fucking anything done at like, our training sessions were at 1,000,000% all the time. We used to train like that, play like that, and off the field was like that.
Yeah.
So they've just gone the other way, and they're just, the play bits just, whatever. Mm. You can still have a drink, but they're petrified to turn up on the Monday and be like a little bit off.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's the culture thing. That's a culture shift. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah. That has to be financial as well, right?
Yeah, like, money plays a part. Yeah, look, there's more repercussions and there's more money on the line now. So being professional, like I got an insight into Melbourne Storm's culture. I've become close with a couple, in particular like Munster and a few of these players. And Bellamy's like that. So even though you think of like some of those Melbourne Storm players over the years as larrikins.
Fun boys. That
he identifies spots in the schedule early on in the year. So they've always got a carrot. Mm.
Yeah.
They've got like 5-6 weeks. They boys, you've got a bye coming up in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We're going to get together. They all get together as a club. They invite their partners, all that sort of stuff. They drop the shoulders together.
Yeah.
So they know that they can work hard. I think a lot more teams and a lot more players, individuals are doing that these days. Mm. Where I was like, me and Mace are pretty much similar.
Were you in the Manly in the red leather couch days?
Yeah. Shout out to the red leather.
Yeah, the red leather.
And the snake.
Love it.
Yeah. You only really played for Manly if you made it to red leather. If you haven't made it to red leather, you're not a proper
Manly player.
And
I played 1 year and I got to red leather.
Mace was somehow at red leather before he even got to Manly. That happened.
Exactly.
But yeah, so like then that was a heavy drinking culture. But Jakey's a great example of that. Jake Trbojevic wasn't.
Yeah. No.
He was a late bloomer. He enjoys the schooner now, but he's by no means is he.
Drives her on home.
Yeah. But when he first came into the grade, we had a very heavy drinking culture at Manly. But Jakey was always a bit naive, bit younger, and he didn't enjoy drinking. No one ever forced him. It was compulsory. He turned up to every team drink day.
Yeah, right.
So he had to turn up. He had his snitty, he had his Coke.
Yeah.
He sat there and he was part of the group for an hour or two, and then the boys could go. He could go home and
you get out of here, kid.
Yeah, for the most part, Jakey never left. Jakey would stay there longer than everyone.
Sort of thing that I always look at. At young kids, even from like the pathways to even like first graders having chats with them, it's like I don't want it to seem like it's a job to them, right? And it doesn't look like fun sometimes. Like the way I wanted to play the game, because it looks so much fun, and it was always fun from when I was young to when I played and after it. And most of the time it was fun because we used to have a good time and win and have a good time after the game.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? That's what I don't see that element of fun. And it really, and I'm seeing it like at training and everything like that because it's so serious from under 17s now.
Yeah, you're right.
Like these kids at 17 look like, they're like it's their 10th preseason.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a slog. I said, dude, you're not even nowhere near first grade and you're looking like this, bro. I'm like, and I try and really put in that fun element.
Yeah.
It's not fun going out, hey, don't get on the pitch, but just have fun at training. Yeah, compete with each other.
Have a joke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, I see it and I'm just like, come on, boys. Like, this is supposed to be the prime of your life when you're a young kid.
Yeah.
It's not, I said, if you get better at this shit, you're gonna get to first grade. Then the fun's fucking taken out.
Mm.
Like, it was fun for me my whole career, right? Yeah. Life is always fun. Still fucking fun now.
Yeah.
And as soon as it wasn't fun, I was 36 and I was in Ibiza and I retired. That's when it wasn't fun for me because the coach pissed me off and I didn't want to turn up the train. And I was like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
But I was 36.
Yeah.
So imagine if it's done at 22.
Yeah, I know.
I would have went, that's my point. I'm like, if I was 22 and I'm thinking I'm going to the first grade and I'm like, this sucks, man. It's not fun. The coach is an ass. I said, all the boys are fucking flogs. I'm out.
Mm.
Like, it just never happened to me like that.
You oversaw, and we've spoken about this before, you were kind of the first, one of the first faces in like the Pacific kind of revolution, one of the early Tongan boys.
Mm.
Your family came via New Zealand scope, but also you would have, you know, joined that first wave.
Well, my dad was one of the first, like when the Kiwi influx happened.
Yeah.
And like right at the start, so you think of the Sorensen brothers in the 80s, the mid 80s, and then there was Hugh McGann, Olsen Filipina.
Yeah.
And then my dad started playing NRL in 1990, and there probably would have been a representation of less than 5% of either Kiwis or Islanders. Now it's 60%.
Now it's 60%.
That's in NRL.
Yeah.
Imagine what it's like in the pathways.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I'm wondering. What are the demographics you're seeing with the younger kids coming through? Is there, I know with Hazem, El Majri, he triggered a wave of, Lebanese.
They're all coming through now.
Yeah.
They're in the pathways now, and they're in a lot of systems.
Yeah. African lads?
A lot of Fijians.
More AFL, Blacktown. I reckon.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because Sudanese and everything settled down in Melbourne.
Yeah, right.
A lot settled in Melbourne. A few out west, so you'd be, the next 10 years,
basketball
you'll probably
as well.
See a lot more influx of that rugby league in Melbourne, right? Because they spent $30 million on some complex for rugby league down there for development and everything like that. So with the Polynesian kids, you've probably seen, like, I think it's probably high. It's like 60, 70%.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's like, I think that's sort of probably going to die down too now because of the pace of the game.
Yeah, right.
Because you're like, I'm looking at young kids now, like, what sort of body types you're looking at? Yeah. You're sort of stalking how fit they are.
Josh Papali'i's not getting
the
start.
Papali'i, yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're looking at that, you're like, you're looking at middles, you're like, if you can't play like a whole, like, 30 minutes straight in the middle, like in SG ball, which is under 19s, or the next one, Jersey Flag, you're looking sideways going, well, where's that next kid?
How does Payne Haas do it? He's got always look at him and I just don't understand how a guy who is that size has
genetics.
That motor.
His genetics. Mm. He's Samoan. He's got like Swedish in him, Filipino. Like he's cut from a few different different cloths.
Because you look at his shape ethic. Right and go like, nah, he's no, probably not
because he's
have...
like a buck 25. He's about buck 20.
And
mate.
He wins fitness tests, doesn't he at the Broncos?
He's fast. That's why he's unstoppable. Like you're never going to see a Payne Haas in it again. Yeah. Like people need to understand what we're seeing now is fucking near greatness.
Mm.
What he's doing in this modern day era, how fast it is, how effective that guy is, what he does in the game, and how dominant he is, right? You throw in a couple of grand finals to that guy, a couple of man of the matches in State of Origin, he'll go down as fucking top three easy props of all time in any era. You throw him in the 80s, what would he do now?
Yeah.
He doesn't even lift a weight, he's 120 kilo.
Yeah. And he's a ball player.
You know, in this modern day, he doesn't have to ball play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He doesn't have to ball play like he doesn't have, he's got that skill set, but he doesn't have to. Because no one can bash him one-on-one. Unless you're like, you really get him slipping. Okay, Leota might get under him, but it still ain't going to be boom on his back. It's just going to go, and he's just probably going to play the ball. Yeah.
Never really seen him.
He's just going to gradually stop running.
You know, like Tino might get him maybe if you get him off balance. It's going to be very rare to hit a sort of guy like that. So you're looking at different body types in, like you're probably looking at Leota and Fisher-Harris body types, to be honest. Because it's hard to get a guy like a Tino, a 6'5" guy, 115, 20 kilos, 10, 12% body fat with a high skill set and a big motor. Yeah. So they're an anomaly. So when you see those kids, boom, every team will go to that body type because it's rare, right? Payne Haas is rare. So that's why the 15, 16
so
year old
running,
kids.
Running's going to be a big part of it. Like,
you better be fit, kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Body types.
If you're not beeping like 14, if you're not
these
doing
beach
the
balls
if you're not
yo-yo, last,
if you're not yo-yoing near 20 in the middle, you might play NRL, but you're not going to dominate the game. Now, why would you want to play a game that you're not going to dominate? Especially the big Polynesian kids. I've got a lot to do with these young kids. Like 6'4", 12% body fat. They've got all the data and analytics. I'm just like, if you don't have a skill set that we're looking for, you will not progress to the next stage.
Yeah.
The passing game. You can't just be a battering ram to run into people because when you get to the next level, you've got to run into a Fisher-Harris who's going to fold you. And you're going to run into a Payne Haas and a Tino and a Leota and a Fanua Blake and all these guys that will pump you if you don't have that skill set to pass. Nice soft hands, understand unders, overs, detail at markers, all these sort of things. That's all I'm looking at as to a young kid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if he's not ticking these boxes now, 18, 19, 20 will give you. And then if you're not doing it by 20, you're out of the game.
Yeah.
So the next 17-year-old kid comes up. Then the next one. So you give him about 3 years. So if you don't work on, like if you're a young kid listening, if you're not coached well from 12 to 15 with all the fundamentals and passing and skill set and everything like that, then 15 to 20, that's when you really got to put your work in, right? You got to really like just get your fitness, get your passing IQ of the game. And then like physicality, that's the lowest hanging fruit for you because you're 6'4" and 120 kilo. But you got to have all the other skill sets for you to dominate. So if you have all those, then you got a Tino.
Yeah.
Then you got a Payne Haas. Then you got all these other guys. And then you, on top of that, be as fit as a marathon runner.
Yeah.
You know, like it is ridiculous how many big kids are out there that cannot string more than 15 minutes together. I'm like, if I put you in the middle in an NRL game right now, kid, how long do you reckon you'd last?
7 or 8.
Fucking not even 4 sets.
Yeah. How did you guys go? What was changing in the game when you came along?
The wrestle.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wrestle would become pretty big. Your Melbourne Storm were at the forefront of it. When I started in 2010, they had already been dominating for a couple of years through the middle part of Mace's career.
So they were bringing down MMA jiu-jitsu coaches to training? Was that
what they had? Like, John, the guy, he coached Randy Couture and shit, and he was their dude.
Yeah. I feel like coaches are trying to quicken the game up and look for athletes that can quicken the game up. Mm. Back when I started, they were trying to slow it down.
Mm. Right.
So it was more about that endurance.
Can I ask body types there? The debate seems to have fired up a little bit over the last week or so, and it always seems to be the same people. It's like skinny white halfbacks and tuck shop lady mums called Cheryl who want to see weight divisions in place for younger kids. What do you guys reckon about
that? It's a mentality, right? You got a 12-year-old kid who is an absolute wrecking ball and like is bending blokes back and just tackle tech off the chain. You're like, yeah, you're too good for 12-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but if
you're
gonna,
you?
No,
was that you boys?
No, never. If you've got a 12-year-old Polynesian kid who's just big, who's just having fun and just walking through the line, all that sort of stuff, he's not coming off the back fence knocking people out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if he's doing that, you've got to put him up, right? Yeah, like, he's just way too good. If he's doing stuff like Tal Malolo's doing in first grade when he's in his prime, you need to move up. But if he's a 10-year-old kid who's just playing with his mates, who's just chubby, big Polynesian kid, bro. Yeah. That's what happens. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he's walking through the line. He's not destroying anything.
Teach the kids how to get tangled up in those ankles.
You know, like, good luck, you know. But if he's doing other stuff that it's like actually like hurting other kids, yeah, maybe look at putting him up. But you don't put him up because mentally, and you don't shame the kid as well. Mm. I've done that a couple of times. Like, you can't do that to that big kid, man. He's mentally still a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Know? Or a 10-year-old kid. Like, you're scarring him for life. He doesn't want to do any team sport. His parents are probably trying to educate him on being in team sport, what's good for his growth, instead of sitting at home playing fucking video games. Yeah. All that shit.
Yeah.
Right? Don't do that. Don't do that to the kids. Like, the coaches aren't stupid enough to have a 12-year-old kid who's an absolute gun. You're like, you probably want to put him up to 14s or 15s to make – it's probably better for his development.
Yeah.
What's he going to learn running through fucking 40 people?
But it's like academics, right? Like, if the kid's too smart for grade 6, they're going up to grade 7. Like,
that's a good point.
Some kids are finishing school.
So you should look at how dominant this kid is and go – he can't play 10s. Yeah. Put him up to 13s. Yeah. It's about where he's at.
Yeah.
Don't just put him at 13s because he's 130 kilos.
Yeah.
He's not ready for 13s because a 13-year-old kid, he's a young little man. You know, it's a different mentality. Yeah, scar the kid for life.
Yeah, because kids are getting scarred at either end of that, right? Like, you know, oh, well, he's a big island lad. He can keep moving and it's very funny and everyone's hanging off him. And then when he falls, he might, you know, some kid might get squashed. But that's all good, right? It's not like, as you said, he's not back fencing it and he's not, you know, he doesn't know how to get under someone's ribs and crush
he's not putting his front foot in and jamming his shoulder into your ribs and wrestling and putting your fucking python grips on him.
That kid, when you move him up to 13s, he's, you know, there's guys with hair on their chin and they're absolutely going to.
Especially out west. Yeah. Especially out west, because there's a lot of. You go out there, man, I'll do like some work with Harold Matz in the development. There's some kids there, like, he's 14. I said, how big's this kid, mean Ogre? Ogre and I just said, and looking, going, he's 6'3". And I'm like, they've all got that. You know, the Bulldogs have got that one. Penrith's got him. Like, everybody's got the big Polynesian kid. Because, like, but it's not like you got to develop them as football players, you know? So it's a.
What do you reckon, you're saying pros and cons?
Oh, like, yeah, there's sort of nail on it, but there's pros and cons to both. Like, he doesn't develop that skill set that's required as he gets older. But also, I was undersized for my age. So having those guys at that competition for me gave me confidence by the time I got older.
Yeah,
so I was able to tackle those boys. I wasn't able to tackle them early on. Once I start getting to 13, 14.
I was the opposite. The moment everyone caught up to me, I just quit.
You gain confidence.
These guys
are
bigger than me now and they're fucking me up. So I no longer have that growth spurt advantage.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah, yeah. It does give you confidence though when you learn how to tackle them eventually. Yeah.
Mm.
And then you get to 15 and 16, you're like, oh, I can handle myself.
So important the development of young kids. Because I'm at the coalface now and I see these kids come through the grades and not get taught the fundamentals of rugby league with 3-on-2s and passing and soft hands and that. Yep. It's just the product of give the ball to the big Polynesian kid and let 20 blokes hang off his legs and let him walk through. Yep. And then he gets to around about 17, 18 where he is now. Then you've got to deal with the big kid out of Penrith that's as big as you and Canberra and New Parramatta, Zealand. New Zealand. But the difference is we'll be like he's been taught – how to pass the ball. Yeah. Then you're going to get a Tino, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentals, all that kind of stuff. Depends what position he's been playing, all that kind of stuff. Like, and then let him grow and then they get to about 17, 18 and then you could really like point whatever position they want in.
Where are the pockets of talent you're seeing? I mean, obviously the Penrith grassroots, everyone will say that, but that's also Penrith grassroots is equivalent to fucking half of a city. Where else are you seeing? I know there's always, I mean, we always see veins in the bush, Central Queensland. That's where the last kind of wave of kind of white boys have come from is the fucking Munsters and the Harry Grants and DCEs and whatever. Where else are you seeing? Are you seeing a little – and I know that the Bulldogs have changed now where the club is – and this is all Gus, right? The club's a bit more involved in the regos and paying for things for the kids in the grassroots level, which obviously encourages grassroots. Are there pockets down that way, southwest?
No. I don't know. I'd say New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand.
I think it's always untapped. Like, I remember we got Sonny Bill and Roy Asitasi within 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're
turned
like,
out all right.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I just leave those two names there, like, you're like, that's enough. You know, if you're a recruitment officer, that's enough. I got Roy Asitasi and I got Sonny Bill. I quit. That's it. That's about it. So there's always that young kid. Yeah, look at RTS sort of slip through. Yeah. You've got to have that person on the ground in New Zealand that looking at these guys come through New Zealand schoolboys and that they're sort of at the cross lines. They're going, I could go to league. more money,
yeah.
Union, probably less, got to wait in front, yeah. behind Bowden Barrett and all these sort yeah. of freaks, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I think New Zealand's still untapped.
Do you boys reckon you have those skills, like that Artie Beetson eye? You know, he was...
It's hard. Like, Artie Beetson was in a different era
yeah.
where you could identify a lot of talent.
Yeah.
Like, even like Noel Cleal, remember Noel Cleal was out in the country getting like Jamie Lyon and stuff yeah. like that.
O'Sullivan.
Yeah, guys.
He's
yeah.
worked with Wayne heaps.
Yeah, yeah. O'Sullivan's the one with the Dolphins all, now. But right?
What's
the
happening
storm.
Now?
He was a big part of the storm.
Yeah, right? yeah. He was big. Yeah. But you get these kids, and they're already like under management. This yeah. is what happens. Like you got, so the managers already got these guys at 15. Yeah. So the managers talk to the recruitment the and the development. So that relationship yeah. there means you get their best kid.
Yeah.
You'll get Payne Haas. Do you know what I mean? You'll yeah. get Tino because they've been looking after him since they were 15. Then they get to 18, 19, and they're playing first grade, all that sort of yeah. stuff. But they're cultivated really early.
Yeah.
All the big dogs are. So if you see that young kid who's 6 foot four, 110 yeah. kilos, pretty lean, good skill set, guaranteed he's contracting you as a manager.
Yeah, right.
There's no little diamonds out there when you're going out in the Dubbo and all this shit. Like, oh, my God, there's yeah, fucking yeah. Greg Inglis.
Yeah.
No. He's contracted. He's under management.
Yeah.
He's ready to
so
come
there's
up.
There's a lot more
there
eyes.
There is so yeah. many eyes, and they're already ready to go. It's yeah. the cultivation of those young kids and being them in the right system
yeah.
for those kids at the right time so they can be the players that they are.
Right.
And that's about it. We ain't going to go to Serena and find Wendell Saylor. You know what I mean? Well, it's just a big 6'5" winger yeah. just stepping off his left foot, left arm, carry right palm. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. you're not going to see that. You're not going to see Lottie Takiris. You know, they're already
Matt
done.
Scott and Longreach. Yeah.
You're probably going to see him in Fiji and the islands yep. and New yeah. Zealand. Yeah. That's where you're going to see the kid that yeah. you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what motor he's got. Yeah. And then you've got to get him out of your union system.
Yeah.
Fiji, they're getting picked from in union teams all the time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, like, it's. I think that's the – when you look to, when you talk to Gus and you talk to these guys ahead of recruitment.
How about New Guinea, Papua New Guinea? I mean, I feel like Mace, I don't know about you, Scope. You've been there a few
yeah,
times.
It's crazy.
Have you played up there?
No, yeah. I haven't. No, I've heard great things.
But do you
it's
see
a wild, wild west, mate.
Hit and run only.
Oh, my God.
But do you see that, like, you know, I'm sure you see it with the kids running alongside your taxi from the airport. But you're like, we should bring him back home.
We've already, and I think, as I said before, the best New Guinea kids are probably already under contract and
really?
Already found.
Even in Moresby, you reckon?
Yeah, because right. they're everywhere. Recruitment's everywhere. The amount of things I get sent email-wise of a young kid in New Guinea, in New Zealand, I send them to Gus. Because the kids look good. Yeah. But as I say, they're the highlights. Mm. It's a highlight yeah. package. They call the highlights package for real, right? They're going to send you fucking missed tackles or how lazy you were, like, in all your worst defensive I mean, decisions. It's the highlights, right?
Super and I'm like, rugby's problem at yeah. the moment.
Yes. And yeah. I'm like, I'll forward it to Gus and go, what are you, this kid? Or because they just send me, because it's easy to do now. The highlights package, boom. Because my email's on the thing.
Some
how
real
many
good
emails
ones.
Of highlight packages have I seen? So, okay, I don't know.
Hey,
I need to see a whole game.
Yeah.
Here comes understand.
Now, let's talk about the current season right now. Well, I mean, we just spoke a little bit about how the West Tigers are going to win the comp, but what else are you seeing out there? Who are your dark horses? Who are your smokies? Last year, you both said Cowboys, yeah, at the yeah. start of the season.
I still like the Cowboys. I think there's going to be a team that I feel like will surprise us. Whether it's a Parramatta,
is that because of the injuries? You think?
Because the top teams who lost players. So yeah. it looks at the moment, it looks like still Penrith in distant second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you've got Broncos thereabouts. Storm are going to be thereabouts with their culture.
Yeah.
But I feel like a team like the Cowboys, Manly, Parra,
Cronulla,
if yeah. they can get their shit together and string a few games at the back end and have momentum, a team yeah. like that might. Yeah. You remember how Penrith a couple of years played Parramatta yeah. in the grand final and yeah. they probably weren't the second best team,
yeah.
but they just had a really nice run going yeah. into the finals and, yeah. and started to lock down at the back end of the season.
So it's less about windows. It's less about premiership windows. It's more about the season they're playing.
Yeah, the run, yeah. momentum, yeah. and key injuries having been healthy.
Yeah. How's the Broncos window looking?
It's there. Yeah. Just what they did against the Cowboys was so impressive on
yeah,
the that weekend.
Was good. Yeah.
No Reece Walsh and Payne Haas.
That was impressive. That's what I thought. I backed the Cowboys simply because those two are out.
Yeah.
And they're so important and they just went like a juggernaut. That's what good sides do. Mm. Yeah. That's what good sides do. Look at Penrith.
Yeah.
I thought the Roosters is my little smoky if they get their shit together.
Mm-hmm.
It was disappointing watching them on the weekend just getting towed up by Penrith. And I'm just like, I'm not backing against Penrith again. You know what I mean? Like, it just showed me how like clinical and how professional they are just to get the job done. Big game. We're coming to Allianz, yep. wear our pink tops and we'll beat the shit out of you.
Yep. It's just like a switch, right? Like they just decide, no, we're flicking it today, man, and we're just going to pump
When you talk about next man up mentality, they live and breathe it.
Yeah.
But I think if the Roosters sort of find some continuity between Smith and Sam Walker and Keary, same page, because it looks like they're really off the page when they're off.
And hope they end up on the opposite side of Penrith. Because they can't beat Penrith.
No, they can't beat Penrith. No.
But they just can't beat Penrith. Yeah.
Like Sam Walker, they need to hand the reins to Sam Walker and let him fucking run the team.
Do you think he's there? Do you think he's there?
It's his third or fourth year.
Maturity wise?
Yeah. Fourth year, I'm thinking that's time. You know, he's last year.
We all got a bit worried about him when he did that big move when he ran the clock out that match.
Circled back against the Titans.
Like, I love smart that. Play. I love that shit.
That's
smart players don't do it more,
I don't know. They're the ones with all the strike. They're the ones with all the strike that can go head to head with Penrith, with because their kicking game, their back five can really get out of yardage. You've got good guys up front. They've got good bench, good depth. Like, they're exactly like Penrith. Mm. But Penrith are clinical. Yeah. That's the only team that I can see that could actually beat them. They've been Parramatta of Parramatta on.
You're saying that, was it the Roosters have lost nine in a row to Penrith?
Yeah.
In a row. Yeah. They haven't beaten for like 5 years. And they've had a good roster the entire time. Now, Penrith would have done that to a lot of teams.
Yeah.
But Roosters,
Roosters more.
Roosters have got the roster to actually not drop that many. So I think they've got to get over that.
Roosters get a bit superstitious too. You know, like they do, and Parramatta does too. Some clubs get fucking West do. Some clubs get very superstitious about, oh, we're playing here against them. Whereas I think you don't actually see that.
And then people rattle out these stats, and I'm not sure players read into that shit, but surely not.
It subconsciously becomes a thing, though. I remember at we were at Manly, we had a good run against Cronulla during the period I was there. Cronulla was still a good team, but for whatever reason, no matter where we were on the ladder, we always went good against Cronulla.
Yeah, right.
And they'd talk about it before the game, and for whatever reason, it would play out that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just found that surprising because they were a good team. They ended up winning the comp in 16. And Gal was there for a long period. But
well, lastly, I want to ask you, which player do you think is going to emerge this year? We've seen it. I don't know, was it Dylan Edwards maybe last year or the year before kind of came through? Who is not really a household name? I'm actually really surprised by this hip drop on that Galvin.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
He's like just hanging on.
Yeah, I was like, well, but I'm also surprised that he's now a household name, not because of the tackle, but everyone's talking about this guy and what it's going to mean missing him for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Who's coming through?
No, probably him in my books. Yeah. I haven't seen enough of him yet, but I just saw that moment of like, like the game's on the line. Yeah. Give him the ball. He takes his mate on, right? Yeah. Smashes a palm in his face. Sets the try out for Buller. That's ice in his veins, man. Yeah. Especially coming off after like the 10 minutes could have rattled him. Having that confidence, the team having confidence in him, him having confidence in the team, right? They defended 10 minutes without him.
Mm.
And you can see when Appy went, we fucking just defended 10 minutes for you, mate. Yeah. He just went,
yeah.
Let me give you this one back.
And his mate, who he ran over, Tom Trebojevic the week before as well.
You know what I mean? I don't know if he's going to be a household name.
Shout out to Westfield Sports High, great high school.
Household name, but he's going to be, I don't know. It could be the perfect storm for him with this year with the West Tigers. They need that. They need that sort of hope.
Benji, a good coach?
I think he is, man. Yeah. He's got some good people around him, but.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
He's got good coaches around him. He just needs to, like, there's a lot of little things. I saw Matty Johns, I think he was on the bye round. He was saying, but he was trying to get into coaching like 13, 14 years ago. Billy told him, he goes, look, what you do is actually coaching.
Yeah.
Because you come down for your hour. And I remember Matty Johns coming around the Roosters and everything when we were there.
Coaching the halves.
He was definitely coaching. It was coaching. He goes, it's got nothing to do with this. This is that. And then you got to deal with members. You got to deal with the board. You got to deal with all these other things that bother the shit out of you, right?
You
got to
be
a
politician.
You know, like you got to have all these. So all the assistant coaches and the specialist coaches, get all the coaching.
Yeah.
You got to be the man manager. Yeah. You got to manage the egos. You got to manage the personalities and everything like that. So Wayne Bennett and that can keep coaching forever because they're the kings at it.
Yeah.
Once you master that, like even
Bellamy. They're not down there running train tracks.
No, mate, they're not running fucking. That's the difference, right? Yeah, but a lot of young coaches dive into it real fucking early and it consumes them.
Mm.
And that's where Benji said, I'm going to take a different route.
Yeah.
Where? Because he's probably seen what happened to Tim Sheens and all these other coaches that he's been under. He's like, I'm going to do it my way. Dean Ritchie gave him some tips.
Is that kind of like the. is that kind of like you're more of an origin coach in that sense? You know what I mean? You're just there and you're around and you're hovering above him.
Yeah, but I think he'd be more hands-on, Benji. Yeah. You know, like, but he's got Heinington there. He's got Robbie Farah. He's got Scando there. All the guys that he's been in war with and played a lot of games with who he trusts.
Mm.
And I think they trust him. You know, so when you get your halves coach or your defensive coach and you understand we're on the same page, You don't care. Yeah. You go do your thing. We're on the same page. We all sit around as coaches now. What's our main objective? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. We need this, X, Y, and Z. Then we all come back in. We got it all done.
Yeah.
You nail it.
You
right?
trust the message.
You don't over fucking see. You don't undermine. Right? And I think he's really good at that because he's got a good demeanor, Benji.
Really quickly, because we've got to wrap up. Dez Hasler up at the Titans. Mm. We're seeing Benji come through different. Like you're talking about him being kind of a modern coach, looking at doing things differently. Dez's probably old a lot school. More of the old school.
Yeah, he'll get the season to figure it out. I'm not too sure if he's got the roster right there. He needs help in the halves. We had the podcast before. We said in this day and age, if you don't have a halfback, and it's the similar issues that the Bulldogs have got at the moment with Hutchinson, he's more of a filling guy rather than a full-time. So probably get the season.
A couple of key players. Yeah. Like he loves foreign and stuff like that. But he looks like not a mess. Like last week it did, I think, when the Dogs got him pretty convincingly, it did. But last week they looked all right for like 25 minutes. They were up on the Dolphins, but like I'm not sure if his coaching philosophies are flying now.
Is he the brand of coach we're talking about that's down there with the boys running drills? Is he?
No, he never has been. He's a lot of detail involved in his coaching, a lot of analytics.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not sure if that cattle up there are analytical players.
He's a bit quirky too.
He's
very quirky.
Yeah, so like I think Dez is a good coach, but those teams that he had at Manly and at Bulldogs, they were pretty good teams. They were top four teams every year. You know, he had some really good cattle there. If you have a look at those sides from 2004 to 2011, and then you have a look at the Dogs from 12 to 15, 16 or whenever he left, got the two premierships, got the two other ones, lost them, could have four premiership rings.
Scope, what kind of quirkiness are we talking?
Oh, look, I wasn't there while he was there, but like you think it does in some of the, I don't know if you've seen his post-match press conferences, He's a bit of a weird cat. And he also, if you're a weird cat, then you've got to have, like,
weird
look at the playing.
Cats around you.
Yeah, he's got, like, Chalky and Snake and all those guys are a little bit different. James Graham, you listen to him on the podcast. He's a bit of a weirdo in the best possible way, right?
Yeah, we are all
so
weirdos.
You've just, I'm looking at that Titans team. I'm trying to figure out, like, who's the weirdo that can connect
with him.
It's not
Tino. Tino's a fucking boy from Gimpy with a mullet. No. Like,
he needs a weird cat in the middle that he can translate his message and then he can pass it on to the playing group. Yeah. I don't think he's got that there at the moment.
What about Mad? Is Madge one of this dying breed of coaches,
the drill sergeant.
Major pain?
Well, maybe, because like you have a look at his success at South, right? Just fucking hard-nosed players, bunch of men.
Yeah.
You know, you have a look at that premiership win inside, with the teams that he had when they were
half
going
of them
on,
were related to
going
each other.
On,
yeah.
Going on those big runs, and then he goes to Tigers on the other, the whole paradox is a bunch of kids that didn't relate to him.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a trust thing. It's a how you get spoken to. It's like they're a different generation now. Even like the 2014 team was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Sam Burgess is retired. Greg Inglis is retired. Sutton's retired. Sewell. Every single bloke, every single guy is Ben Teo in that team. Apart from Alex Johnson.
Yeah.
Alex Johnson is the only dude. And Dylan Edwards.
Yeah.
Dylan Edwards and Tom Burgess.
Yeah.
They're the only three. They would have been like 20 years old when they won that.
Who? Dylan Edwards?
Dylan Walker.
Dylan Walker.
He's around. Yeah. So there's all the rest is retired. So they're all a bit older. They're all like serious dudes that you could trust. Sam Burgess to go out there, fucking do your thing, big boy.
Yeah.
John Sutton, Reynolds.
We can
Reynolds
do the army camp shit with these boys.
You could see it in the Tales of Tiger Town as well by like episode 3. He's like trying so hard
and
not
he's
to
old
just
school
fucking
Madge.
Abuse them.
Madge is a real old school dude. Like he's cut from that Canberra cloth, right? He's just like Ricky Stewart sort of mold. Fucking harder, fuck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That'll fly in Origin.
You reckon?
That'll fly in Origin because you're dealing with pros.
Yeah.
And you're
dealing with guys
weeks,
that are
right?
men. Yeah. You know what I mean? Grown-ass men that are used to everything. Mm-hmm. They'll love that.
Yeah. Interesting. It's an interesting season we're looking down the barrel at. As we said, the momentum's only growing. Vegas round was a great way to start it off because, like, we actually didn't know when the AFL started. It kind of crowded. It flooded the zone, you know what I mean? And all AFL.
All union.
Yeah, all union.
Well.
All union.
That's a whole different year. Another
episode.
I think Vegas
crowds outside of Queensland, union's still thriving up. We are red, but, I do think the
that's done.
It's going to be a really interesting season. I think the injuries to the Stars at this stage is going to result, as you said, in the run. It's not going to be a window season. Outside of obviously Penrith and maybe Broncos, it's the run. It's whoever from here can make the most of it.
Healthy 8 weeks.
Everyone has a different mindset. Everyone has a different mindset. If you're like one of those lower sort of six teams, you're like, just fucking jag, like, just sit at 500, right?
Yeah.
Three wins, three losses, not too bad until we start getting through Origin and all that sort of shit. Jag some through Origin. So we're not – it's a different – and then you're Penrith, it's like – We just roll everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We'll get to the finals.
We'll get to the finals. And then you're, if you're another top four team, you're like, we need to position ourselves so we're not first round with Penrith.
Yeah.
Then good luck.
The team we forgot is the Warriors, actually.
Oh, shit, yeah.
So when they go through origin period, they're a team that could benefit and be healthy at the right time of the season. Not, are there any origin players?
There's not one origin player.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll keep eyes on that. Yeah.
Up the wires, eh?
Jack Black.
Up the wires.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks,
we'll probably get you at the back end of the season and see how all these predictions panned out.
Done.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks.